Hi, my name is Jose Luis Perez, and I'm a PhD student at Texas A&M University. And my research is dealing with bitter melon. Bitter melon is a crop that's very, popular in Asia, South America, several other countries also, but it's not very well known here in the U.S. So I want to, first of all, give you an overall introduction of what bitter melon is, what it's used for. Hopefully, one of the goals of my research is to see if we can grow it as a specialty crop in Texas and to see some of its health benefits. So first of all, bitter melon, it's known by many different names throughout the world. Garela in India, bitter gourd, balsam pear. The Philippines had a different name. In South America, there's many different names for it. A lot of people are turned off by it because of its warty exterior. You see it and you, if you've never been exposed to it, it looks different. It's oblong. Some varieties are a little bit more roundish. Some are a little bit more fusiform depending on the variety. It grows typically in a vine. It's typically eaten immaturely, so it's when it's green. And as it matures, it turns orange. And the seeds are very nice to see because when that opens up, it's bright, bright red. So it's a very, very noticeable change from an immature to a mature fruit. Where it's typically grown in China, Egypt, several places in South America, Mexico. In the U.S., it's also grown in Hawaii, in California, Florida. But if you look at the terminal market data by USDA, and you see where all their bitter melon is coming from for in this particular area, in any terminal market for that matter, most of them, some like in, for example in California, they grow enough for their consumption. Hawaii the same thing, Florida the same thing. All the other places in the U.S. they're being exported or imported from South America. So I think Texas has a really good possibility as for growing this as a specialty crop because, again, it's right in the middle of the U.S. It's logistically very, very well positioned, and it has the temporal environments to grow this this crop. So what's the big deal with bitter melon? So why should people eat it? First of all, their health benefits. There are all these health benefits have been reported by either enzyme assays, cell culture, and animal studies, you name it. These have antiviral properties, some have antimalarial, anti-cancer, but the bulk of the information is on its anti-diabetic properties. That's what most of the people know bitter melon for the anti-diabetic properties. So the importance of this research for me, it's more personal. I'm from an area of South Texas, the Rio Grande Valley, and it's very, very, the diabetes incidence in South Texas is epidemic. There is, if you see that, that's 2011 data, but 40% of prevalence of diabetes. There, where I'm specifically from Hidalgo County, 17. Again, this is a little bit older data, but in Cameron and Stark County, which are the two counties surrounding my county, again, it's 40%, almost 30% in Cameron with actual numbers. So that diabetes rate is kind of like an outlook for what the U.S. would look like in a couple years. Because the incidence of diabetes in the U.S. has been skyrocketing in the past couple of years. Diabetes is a very complex disease, so that is good and that is bad, because that can be good because there's many different ways that you can fight diabetes. And all of these have been, for example, reported in bitter melon that have some anti-diabetic property. For example, first, that inhibits the breakdown of complex sugars. When you ingest a starchy material, your body has enzymes that break down all these sugars so they can be absorbed. So bitter melon has been reported to inhibit that breakdown. It's also been reported to increase the uptake of sugars to different tissues, for example, muscle tissues. When sugar is floating around in the cardiovascular system, muscle tissues can absorb it by stimulus from insulin. It also increases insulin secretion by the pancreas. It increases sensitivity of insulin through different tissues, adipose, liver, muscle tissues. And it also reduces the fasting glucose levels in the body. And these are just some. There's many other reports that have different mechanisms or mechanisms of action on how bitter melon works. There's actually several clinical trials that have been reported. Most of these have some positive effect, but also if you look at the latest or the 2011, this was a double-blind randomized controlled trial, and it showed positive effect. And it's one of the more complete studies that are reported in this particular table. So bitter melon chemistry, there's about 250 different compounds with this particular structure, or compounds with that particular nucleus of structure. That's most of these, from momordisin to momordol and other triterpenoids. So there's many, many different ones of these compounds in the different varieties, in different levels. So one of the goals that we have is to identify some of these and see which one actually has the antidiabetic properties. So what's the holdup? Why isn't anybody, again, consuming bitter melon? First of all, nobody knows it. Every time I give a seminar, this comes up. I tell people, okay, well, who here has heard about bitter melon? And I can put money on that 90% of the room does not know. This might be a different scenario here because it's ASHS, but any other place, about 90% of the people have never heard, never seen, don't know what it is. Second, it's a vegetable that doesn't lie. Its name says it all, bitter melon. It is extremely bitter if you don't know how to cook it. So the objectives of our study is, first of all, to evaluate its production in Texas as a specialty crop. Second, to evaluate different varieties in production and the different health benefits, if it's anti-diabetic, anti-cancer. Third, to purify some of the active ingredients that have some of these biological activities. And lastly, explore if there's a relationship between bitterness and the health benefits. So for example, if we identify a compound that has these anti-diabetic properties and is not related to bitterness, we can possibly breed a bitter melon that's less bitter, more accepted in the American consumers, and has the same health benefits. How's it grown? It's typically grown in the tropics, subtropics. There's different trellis systems that I've seen in different papers. By trellis, it takes about 2 to 3 months to mature, and once fruit sets, you start to harvest every 3 to 5 days, depending on, again, the variety. The varieties that we started to evaluate in College Station, Texas, were all these 8 varieties, but from these 8, 3 didn't make it to the field because of the vigor of the seedlings, just didn't make it in the field. So we evaluate these 5 other varieties for their viability in Texas. The seeds, they were germinated in potting soil. The seed coat was removed because it's a very, very hard seed coat, and without removing the seed coat, we would get about a 10% germination rate. So we tried hot water treatments and others, but the best results we got was just removal of the seed coat. We waited till they were at their from 4 to 6 and 8 leaf stage before we transplant them onto the field. The field was prepared. We made beds, and we built our trellis with T-posts and fencing to, again, It is kind of expensive, I guess, to build this way, but I've used that trellis system for several seasons, so it's a durable one. And we irrigate it by drip irrigation. Plants were, or the seedlings were planted 29 days after seeding. This is a picture of the plants 20 days after planting, so they're they're growing very vigorously. And we had our first fruit at 35 days after planting. Our yields, we have 2 years' data so far, 2013 and 2014. So 2013 yields were very, very comparable to, I guess my other slide didn't make it from College Station. So I had a slide, a picture here of comparing yields between our yields and yields in other parts of the world. So we compared them from China, India, also California, Hawaii. And our yields are very comparable to what they are reporting. So again, it's feasible to grow it in Texas. In 2014, though, we had a devastating pest called humans building apartment complexes on that field. So I had to move my location. That changed a lot. Plus, we had a lot of rain that particular last year in College Station. So that drastically reduced our yields last year. So this year's trial, hopefully we have better results. Revenue, this is basing it on 2013 data. We have from the five different varieties we evaluated at $15 per 30-pound box per acre, ranging from $4,000 to $10,000 per acre. This is with a plant density of about 5,400 plants per acre. And that seems high, but the reported have been all the way from 1,000 to 8,000 plants per acre. So we're right in the mid-range of that. Now, switching gears from the farming aspect to the biological activity aspect, this is the overall process of how we go about analyzing all our bitter melons. So you have your bitter melon, you process it, you take the pericarp, which is what is the edible part of the bitter melons. We freeze dry it, you get a powder, and from that you extract it via stock soda extraction. Stock soda extraction, we go from hexane to 50% methanol extracts just to try and get a range of all the compounds in the bitter melon. So hexane, we take off most of the lipids, more of the non-polars, and 50% methanol would take all the polar compounds from the fruit material. And again, the extraction process varies. This is more for the purification part, but other analyses that we also do are carotenoid analysis, vitamin C analysis. They have different extraction methods, so this is just a general view. After that, we concentrate our extracts. We do phytochemical analysis by HPLC and biological activities on a 96-well plate reader. So the first set of data, we have the ascorbic acid content in immature pericarp. So on the five varieties, we have levels that are comparable to, again, oranges, some peppers. So they have pretty adequate vitamin C levels. But as the fruit matures, you see that in these two particular varieties, the levels drastically decrease. So again, it is important to evaluate different varieties just so we can be able to say, you know what, this has a higher vitamin C content than this, and this is when it should be consumed versus another stage. We've also evaluated these varieties for their total phenolic content, their DPPH content, which is an antioxidant assay, total saponins, which is an assay for the compounds that have that particular cholesterol type structure, and amylase activity. So I'm just going to report on the saponins and the amylase activity. Total saponins, we have our extracts comparing two different varieties, and we see that the more nonpolar and medium polar extracts have higher level of these compounds. So this might focus now our efforts to purification in these particular extracts. The amylase, one of the strategies for an antidiabetic medication is to inhibit the breakdown of starch. So what amylase does is it breaks down starch so it's absorbable into the small intestine. A carbose, which is this right here, is the medication that's used to prevent or to inhibit that particular enzyme. So starch goes out without the glucose molecules being absorbed in the into the bloodstream. And we saw that our acetone extracts have a 90% inhibition rate for inhibition of this particular enzyme. The purification that we do, we have an NMR and mass spectral analysis to purify and identify these particular compounds. And so far we've identified, this is in our preliminary stages, but we've identified five or six of these compounds in our studies. With that, I thank you, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer. Yes. What was that again? Oh, the question was if this could be grown on a trellising system for pickling or process. I think the earlier on, I think how it was found here in the U.S. was mainly pickled and processed already. So I think it's very feasible to grow it on a trellis system and for those particular purposes versus fresh. Yes.
Did you find differences in mucosidae or some other active compounds across varieties?
That's our next step. That's what we're trying to evaluate now. The problem is that these particular compounds have a very low absorption in UV and HPLC, so it's hard to really quantify. So we're working on methods for that at the moment. Yes.
How do you see these people up there down in South Texas consuming their, as a drug or as a food?
I would hope as a food versus a pill. That's the goal of our center, to develop varieties that are consumed, that consumers would actually use. Yeah, I mean the tacos, tortillas, everything. Yeah. So.